The following contest is scheduled for one fall. Introducing first, from Los Angeles, California, weighing in at 275 pounds, the masterpiece, Chris Masters.
22 years of age, he is 6'4", 275. He's chiseled, there's no doubt about that. Extremely strong, he's got that great grip. He uses the old full Nelson, he calls it the Master Lock, and no one has ever broken the Master Lock or pinned this man here on television.
And you know, when this kid was growing up, he emulated a lot of guys. He watched a lot of superstars as he was growing up and wanted to be a WWE superstar himself. And you know, he dreamed about a night like tonight. Clearly, the biggest night of the Masterpiece's career is right here and right now.
Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive in the classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
The Payoff is back from StarCast, and this episode is going to be a masterpiece. This is Tom Healy, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Jeffrey Ryan. Jeff, we are covering our first Shawn Michaels match. Can you hear the excitement in my voice and see the smile on my face? But first, Jeff, how the hell are you doing?
Not too bad, man. Busy week, but a good one, as always. A little sad to not be at StarCast anymore because we had such a good time when we were there, but that's all right. Good things to look forward to today. Chris Masters, not someone that comes up a lot for most wrestling fans, but kudos to him. He's still out there grinding. He's working all the time. And so I think that's more than enough reason to focus on him this week. So make sure, subscribe, give us 5 stars, and spread the word about The Payoff. You can also always find The Payoff Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever you might use. It's at Payoff Pod. A lot of activity on social media lately, especially after meeting just a ton of fans at StarCast. It was really great to kind of see everyone and interact with them. So don't hesitate to tweet at us. That's the easiest way to get us. Again, that's at Payoff Pod. Last thing, you can always find us on Patreon, just one tier, but lots of content at payoffpatreon.com. That's where you can find us. It's payoffpatreon.com. Our after show, bonus episode each month, just all kinds of items and things that, you know, we hope our fans enjoy. So we'll keep it simple with that. So Tom, what else do you have to share?
Yeah, all great stuff. Again, we're pumped to be back from StarCast. This is the first episode we've recorded since being back there. As a reminder, at Payoff Pod on Twitter is where we talk about the show, and everything we talk about is nostalgic. If you want to know what Jeff and I think about the current product or current events going on in the wrestling business, make sure to follow us on our own Twitter accounts. That's at Payoff Tom and at Payoff Jeff. Again, at Payoff Tom and at Payoff Jeff. If you want to know what we think of the 8-hour episodes of Raw and the 6-hour pay-per-views and the 40 hours of programming each week, certainly hit us up on there and you can hear what we have to say about that. So really appreciate all the interaction on Twitter and throughout social media, continuing to pick up on those followings each week. And it just gives us more energy to keep going, keep sharing content, and keep pushing this show along and growing it. Again, StarCast was absolutely awesome. So great to meet so many of you. We were thrilled to be there. I think I can comfortably say that it exceeded our expectations in a number of different ways. Huge thank you to the StarCast staff. They were all phenomenal, and those were long days and a lot of moving pieces. So great work by all of them. Major thank you. And just some other shout outs to a few other people that really helped us and supported us in various ways throughout the weekend. Conrad Thompson, Dave Silva, Dave Hancock, and Matt Kuhn. You guys were all fantastic, and we appreciate everything you did for us. Also, a huge, huge, huge shout out to the Queen of Extreme, Francine. She was our special guest for our live show that we did on Friday. We watched some old ECW matches. We talked about all kinds of things ECW. Those are going to be some fun episodes for us to share in the future, as we did record those and also did a Q&A with her at the end, just talking about a whole different bunch of subjects. So we're really excited to share that. But again, major thank you to everyone. It was a fantastic trip. Again, exceeded our expectations, and so awesome to do the live show, to meet so many people, to make some great connections with some future guests of ours, and just some fans of the show. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And for those of you that are listening for the first time, we appreciate you being on board. Make sure to check out our archives. We got Warrior Hogan from WrestleMania 6, Shane Douglas throwing down the NWA title, Magnum and Tully in that I Quit Steel Cage match, Eddie Guerrero winning his first title, and a whole bunch more. So make sure to check them out, download them, and listen to them. We promise you will not be disappointed. So again, make sure to check those out. And you know, our goal for every show is to be different. So this one, we're talking a lot about Chris Masters, his career, and then what many think were the best match of his career. Other times we're doing deep dives into the show that was part of the match. You know, so everyone's going to be a little bit different, but we're bringing in stories and interesting information. And so make sure to check them all out, whether it's something you were a big fan of or something that you didn't even know happened. So with that being said, Jeff, quickly walk everyone through our format for each episode.
Yeah, just a quick rundown that we give you a deep dive into a match every Monday. And each episode has three parts: the build, the payoff, and the aftermath. What happened before the match and got us to that point? Talk through the match with our guests, or just, you know, about their career, different things, and then what happened after the match, after the bell rung. So we share a few reviews and write-ups from the different newsletters, websites, things like that when the match occurred, and then we share our payoff score. So Tom, let's jump right into it. Why did you want to talk about Chris Masters versus Shawn Michaels?
Yeah, two main reasons for this one. First of all, as everyone knows that listens to the show, you included, you know that I'm a huge Shawn Michaels mark. So anytime we can cover one of his matches, that's something I'm going to want to do. I can't wait to do a lot more of them. And also, you know, I was just really interested in learning more about Chris Masters. And he's one of those guys that I remember the company had big things for, right? You had the big pyro presentation, the elaborate entrance, the Master Lock Challenge. There were just a lot of things going on that would signal to a fan, wow, this is someone that they're behind. This is someone they've got big things for. So ultimately, he never became a world champion. And I just wanted to learn more about what happened. Who came up with the gimmick? How did he get involved in the business? What ultimately happened that prevented him maybe from reaching his full potential? So it was really fun to do a deep dive, not only just into this match, but his career in general. So that's what really, you know, again, got me excited about doing this episode. What about you, Jeff?
Yeah, you make no state of being or secret of just being a huge HBK fan, but I actually remember the Master Lock Challenge quite well. And at the time, and even now, it was just different. It was a cool idea. It really wasn't something that we'd seen before, at least kind of in that iteration. And I'm all for something that mixes up what we're seeing every week and on TV all the time. And just, it gives us a little enjoyment in the ring. And so, you know, I'm excited to cover this one and see where we go. So with that being said, let's get to the build.
It's time for the build.
All right, here we are with the build. Unforgiven 2005. This is a Raw only pay-per-view. It takes place on September 18th, 2005. We're at the Ford Center in Oklahoma City. This is the first pay-per-view ever held in the state of Oklahoma. 8,000 in the building, held about 19,000. So attendance was a little bit light, but they still managed to do a gate of 485,000, and the pay-per-view buys were 243,000. Just an interesting side note, the pay-per-view revenue for 2005 for the company, $185 million. So it's just wild to think they were, even in a year like this, which certainly wasn't their best year ever, pulling in close to $200 million of revenue in pay-per-view. And now pay-per-view, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist anymore. Just some fun things from this show. Jerry Lawler, Jim Ross on commentary. Gotta love that. This is fun. The show opens with Ric Flair beating Carlito with the figure four to win the Intercontinental title. Now, Jeff, you know how I love the Intercontinental title being used to get the young up-and-comers over. So I thought it was a great use of the title to give this kid Ric Flair some more visibility. But seriously, a fun moment seeing the 56-year-old Flair win the title. He would become the oldest Intercontinental Champion ever. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that that record never gets broken. Now, as I was doing my research for the show, I'm thinking, oh, this must have been that stretch run right before Flair retired. Oh, no, this is 2005, and he didn't retire the first time until March of 2008. So this was still a few more years of Ric Flair being involved in some storylines and some matches. So it was a great little thing to start off the show to have him win. You know, and ultimately, Jeff, as you know, one of my favorite matches of all time was the WrestleMania 24 Flair and HBK match. I was there. It was awesome. It may not have been a five-star Tokyo Dome classic, but in terms of the payoff, I thought it was phenomenal and one of my favorite matches ever.
It's so good to hear. I hope he's enjoying his retirement 11 years ago. So I'm sure he's lived a quiet life since then.
If it's up to him, he'd probably be working an hour-long match this week. So also on this show, Unforgiven 2005, after that IC title opener, there were a couple forgettable matches, depending on how you look at it. We had a women's tag match, okay? Big Show defeating Snitsky. Lance Cade and Trevor Murdoch defeating Hurricane and Rosie to win the tag titles. And then also Shelton Benjamin defeating Kerwin White. Jeff, do you know who Kerwin White is?
Every week you find someone who I don't know who they are. So who is Kerwin White?
Well, I didn't know either, but this was a character briefly played by Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Got it. All right.
All right. Also on the show, now this is fun, Edge and Matt Hardy in a steel cage match. Now, you'll remember this storyline was built off the real life issues between the two of them. Edge swoops in real life and starts dating Matt Hardy's shoot girlfriend, Lita. So a bunch of stuff happens. I'm sure we'll cover it on a future episode. It'd be fun to revisit that feud. Not sure which of them is going to come on and talk about it, but we'll see what we can do here on the payoff. So eventually they turn this into a storyline, and ultimately it was disappointing because when Matt Hardy comes out and attacks Edge, the place is going nuts, right? Complete surprise. Everyone knew the story of what was going on behind the scenes. And then the matches just didn't really deliver. There was, I think, kind of an odd finish. Then they put him in a steel cage. Matt Hardy wins this with a leg drop off the top of the cage onto Edge, which is a really great spot you want to check out. But ultimately, for as great as this storyline should have been, it just didn't deliver in the ring. Just, I think, just some chemistry issues. But, you know, again, they were pros. They went in there. They did the best they could. And I guess pretty cool, all things considered, with the storyline. But both are happily married now with families to other people. So it all worked out. Now, the match we're covering today would go on second to last. The main event on this show is Kurt Angle winning by DQ over WWE Champion John Cena. And Cena just come off a big SummerSlam win against Chris Jericho. Now, what do you think in 2005 of Chris Jericho being in the main event? Do you think he was too old to be in the world title picture at that time?
Yeah, especially when we're recording. Yeah, definitely too old to be a champ. I don't think you can say that.
No. So, but it was interesting. You know, you've heard me say it before. I'll say it again. But it just amazes me. You know, they're asking people to pay $30 for a pay-per-view, and then they end it with a DQ finish. And I just don't understand, on a single-branded pay-per-view where it already feels a bit watered down, but you're still asking a bunch of money, that you can't do clean finishes in these big matches. And to me, it's like, all right, why not just give Cena the clean win, and then the next night on Raw, Kurt Angle can attack him or do something dastardly, and all of a sudden, he gets his heat back. But at least you had a clean finish in this match. So again, I just don't understand some of these DQ countout type finishes in big matches on pay-per-views. I think there's ways to allow one person to win clean, let people be happy, but then still figure out a storyline way to continue the feud. So just some interesting stories going on in the business. This is the month after the Shawn Michaels Hulk Hogan match. Jeff, that's one I want to cover because there was a lot of controversy going into that match. It ended up having a really good build, but then there's some interesting stuff in the aftermath behind the scenes. That's one I would love to cover on a future episode just because of everything happening, not because it was necessarily the greatest match of all time. That SummerSlam 2005 show, by the way, stacked card, really good top to bottom. It was a fun one. Also going on, WWE.com was reporting Vince and Bret Hart actually were shaking hands and posing together for a photo. And then speculation is that he is going to get back in the fold. There's a DVD project and potentially a Hall of Fame induction coming. So big shocking at the time. Also, CM Punk wrestled his final ROH match. Pretty cool to think about what would become of him. The first edition of TNA Impact on Spike TV was getting ready to air. Also, WWE.com put a trailer up for the Self-Destruction of the Ultimate Warrior DVD. For those that haven't seen that, man, it was a hatchet job. They obviously made amends later on, but I think both sides were really trying to stick it to each other at that point in time. And Kevin Nash had just signed with TNA. 4 pay-per-views, 16 TV events over the next year is what his contract called for. And I've always found it fascinating. Now, I'm not one that's seen much TNA, but the amount of people that they had show up for at least an appearance or two over the years always amazed me. And just a few examples: Randy Savage wrestling a match, China, DDP, Mongo McMichael, and the list goes on and on, but just really had a lot of one-offs that I guess flew under the radar because, let's be honest, not a lot of people watched it, nor were they paying $10, I believe it was, for their Wednesday night weekly pay-per-views. Kind of an odd way to launch a wrestling company. So with that being said, now that we've set the stage, Jeff, from a storyline standpoint, how do we get to Chris Masters against HBK at Unforgiven 2005?
Yeah, just a brief overview of Chris Masters' just career. Like a lot of others, he actually got his start in Ultimate Pro Wrestling, the UPW, which we've talked about quite a bit on this show. That was back in 2002. He took some time off because of an injury, but he eventually ended up in what was one of the WWE developmental territories, Ohio Valley Wrestling, or OVW. That was in late 2003 is when he ended up there. He was pretty successful there, both as a singles and a tag team competitor. So doing well while he was there. It started in early 2005 when his character vignettes were playing on Raw every week. They were calling him both the masterpiece and a work of art. If you haven't looked, like, especially back then, he's a big dude. So, you know, definitely kind of check some of those out. I went back. They are just kind of fun when they were starting to show him off. So his finisher, and this was just so much of his character, was the Master Lock. It's really just a variation on a full Nelson. For those of you that aren't familiar with him, or, you know, don't really remember, what he would do is the Master Lock Challenge, and it would be open to anyone that could break the lock. And so it was really just breaking out of his full Nelson hold. I'll skip ahead. He started using it right out of the gate in 2005, but it wasn't until 2007, and someone who's still around, it was actually Bobby Lashley, was the first one to officially breakout of the Master Lock. There were times that even he would find creative ways of preventing people from breaking it, if you will, and just getting out of it. But Lashley was the first to actually do it. And I say creative ways, you know, maybe he would break it himself if someone was about to break it, or, you know, he'd go for it and then fake and then chair shot and then put him in it again, which just little things like that. And so, but officially, however you want to look at it, it's on the record books that it was never broke. There was one, and I enjoyed this. I remembered it before we started kind of researching this episode, but there was one point where they had fans, and definitely not people that they planted in the crowd. They were given a chance to win $1,000 if they could break the Master Lock, which no fan, unfortunately, could break. So,
do you think you could have broke the Master Lock?
For $1,000, I would have tried. So, I'm sure I wouldn't have been. So, it's one thing we learned that, boy, those guys are way bigger than, you know, they're giants. And so, yeah, he would have kicked my ass just with that alone.
Well, hold on. On a somewhat related note, remember on Sunday at StarCast when I asked you, I looked over at a table and I asked if you'd be willing to take a table bump. And you surprisingly, without any hesitation, said, hell yeah, I would.
Yeah, I would do it because, like we said, they would find a good way to protect me more than I would know what I was doing. So it would depend on the move that put me through the table, but I wouldn't immediately say no. And I'd want more than $1,000. But bringing the focus back on this match, as Tom mentioned earlier, we do have to look a little bit at Shawn Michaels and what he was up to at this point as well, too. It was SummerSlam 2005. Michaels lost to Hulk Hogan. And then after the match, he was cutting a promo, and Masters interrupted him and told Shawn Michaels that individuals like him and Hulk Hogan didn't know how to pass the torch to new wrestlers. funny how he was playing the role of today's fans even back in 2005. So I got a nice kick out of that. You know, Master said that he was not trying to steal the spotlight, but that he was going to take it instead. So it wasn't a bad promo, which of course then resulted in Michaels hitting Masters after he got upset. The two brawled a little bit. This is how it always plays out. And so it actually, though, it was served kind of a bigger purpose, because up to this point in the Hogan match, Michaels was actually playing the heel. And so now he flipped and was the face. And so it mixed it up to this point. So a little bit after that, it was the September 5th episode of Raw that Michaels accepted the Master Lock Challenge a little bit later. And then trying to figure out whether or not he could break it, Michaels was fighting hard and almost broke it. But Masters, as we said, his creative, sneaky ways, released the hold. And as Tom said, hit Michaels with a chair and then put the hold back on. So you try and break out of anything after getting hit with a chair, it's not going to happen. You know, and you can already see where this is going. Because of all of that, Michaels then put it out there that he wanted to take on Masters at Unforgiven, which Masters accepted. Tom?
Well, you got a lot there. I will say this. If there's any additional watching that I will assign for the week, go back and watch some of that stuff that Jeff talked about in terms of the Shawn Michaels Hulk Hogan stuff, you know, with him being a heel. Man, it was good. It was aggressive. It was made you a little uncomfortable because you're like, wait, is this a work or a shoot? Great stuff there. And then, yeah, him all of a sudden turning face and Masters kind of establishing himself as the heel. It was just great stuff. So it was a fun build when you factor all of that in. And as always, Jeff, you did an awesome job of walking us through all of it. So Jeff, I'll say this, you know, it's pretty obvious, you know, and you were really gushing about Chris Masters' physique earlier. Pretty obviously works out all of the time. But interestingly enough, I found this out in my conversation with him. Do you know why he has never had anything stolen from his locker at the gym?
I don't, Tom.
Because he has a great master lock.
Boy, you just, every week they're getting worse. So
depends on how you look at it. I think they're getting better. So thanks. I told you that, you know, this was a fun match for us to cover and I wanted to. I'm going to share a quote with you that Chris Masters had said about working with Michaels, just to set the stage for this match. Masters would say, "It was a dream come true. There's something I'll take with me to my grave. He was my childhood idol. I idolized the guy and I still trip out that I got to wrestle him on pay-per-view." How many people get to do that? How many people get to wrestle their idol? So again, man, it's a fun match. It's fun to discuss it with Chris Masters because it clearly meant something to him. And as I allude to while we're watching the match with him, HBK had a little pep at his step because I think he was coming off that Hogan match and really wanted to deliver on pay-per-view. So if you want to watch the match along with Chris Masters, it's Unforgiven 2005. We're going to start at the 1 hour and 49 minute mark on the dot when you hear the ding, ding, ding. Again, Unforgiven 2005, the 1 hour, 49 minute mark on the nose if you want to watch along. So with that being said, it's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right, so we're here with Chris Masters, about to watch him versus the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. You're backstage right now giving the interview. At this time, and again, this was quite a while ago, how scripted was this? I mean, did you just get some bullet points, or were you word for word based on a script?
No, I remember going over this promo with Michael Hayes and even Shawn Michaels, so this was definitely planned out, and we went over it a few times because they were still trying to figure out who I was. So there was a debate on how to present myself, whether I was going to be super loud and aggressive or more subtle and all that, and they ended up kind of just letting me do my thing, but it was definitely scripted.
How did they describe your character when you debuted or as you first got started? Like, what were some of the mannerisms and behavior you were supposed to have?
Kind of the obvious stuff when you're like, your name is the masterpiece, you know, just kind of come out and be as arrogant and self-involved as possible. And in my mind, the masterpiece is just a guy who obviously thinks he's so much better than anybody out there in the crowd. And, you know, everybody out there is beneath him and he's just the best.
So watching this entrance, what do you think? I mean, as a wrestling fan, what do you think when you see this entrance and this presentation?
Well, I've had a lot of fans tell me, especially now that this is almost like retro, that I, you know, really compliment the entrance because they thought it was real cool with the music, the pyro and all that. And it's kind of hard to rate those things objectively when you're doing it on yourself, because you know I know what they mean as a wrestling fan, and you know that's cool if it was an entrance people will remember. That's pretty awesome.
Well, it's fantastic, and I mean I think anytime that you play the video before the entrance and then you know you add some pyro, I mean to me as a fan I'm sitting there going, this guy's a big deal. He's someone that's going to get a push, someone I got to pay attention to. And I mean I'd imagine that your first year in the business, not everyone was getting pyro, not everyone was getting the big presentation like this, so you must have thought, all right, these guys are pretty high on me and I've got a real opportunity here. Is that fair?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I just remember this match was a huge deal for me because I idolized Shawn Michaels growing up. To me, this was like the equivalent of winning the world championship, honestly, because I felt like I was really lucky to be in a program with the guy I grew up looking up to like that and actually get to work him on pay-per-view. And I got to work him on a ton of house shows too. Like it wasn't even just this pay-per-view or TV. We worked all over the world.
And were you working those matches before this or after this on the house shows?
Before and after. They had me start working with them like a month and a, or maybe 5 weeks before this match on house shows. And then we worked well into the end of the year. So this was about September, I believe. So we worked the next about 5 months and, you know, just all over the world in tag matches and singles matches and all kinds of stuff.
So as you were growing up, Shawn Michaels was one of your favorites then?
Oh, he was by far my favorite. I absolutely idolized him. I loved him since, you know, he split with Marty and started doing that whole, I always thought his song was awesome. It was so ridiculous, but it was amazing. And just the whole persona, you know, like just the way he carried himself and all. And I started really appreciating guys like Shawn, Bret, Kurt Hennig. I love those kind of athletic guys who could work and really sell shit good and stuff like that. So, I mean, Shawn was just everything to me, man.
Yeah, that's how I was too. I mean, I was even when he was with the Rockers, I was a big mark. And then all of a sudden, you know, he does the barbershop window. And I was like, oh, man, they're doing something with this guy. This is awesome. So, yeah, those guys were just awesome to watch. So, as you look back, is this your favorite match from your career?
Probably, just because it's him and we got to do it on pay-per-view. And I was so concerned. I wanted this match to go well because I didn't want to be the only guy in history to have a bad pay-per-view match with Shawn Michaels. So that was just going through my mind like all around this time, even going into the match. It gave me anxiety. I was like, I got to have a good match with him because I never want to look back at this and be happy and proud of it.
Yeah, well, real hot start here. You throw him in the master lock before the bell even rings. You're attacking him. It's just different, right? It's a great way to start the match.
I think that was Pat Patterson's idea too, maybe. It was either Pat or Shawn.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask you. So, okay, somebody comes up with this idea. Are you in the back with Shawn mapping this out? How much input did you have? What's called in the ring versus planned out? Give us some insight into that.
Shawn was always real good with me, and it was so easy to work him just because I grew up idolizing him. So after you get a feel for him, it's like you know all his stuff anyway. You've watched him for years. So it actually makes it that much more exciting to take the offense because you've watched it for so long, and you get just as fired up taking his offense as you would giving yours, you know, just because it's him and, you know, the elbow, the kick, the slam, the inverted atomic drop, you know, it's just completely awesome. But Shawn always, he was kind of a bit more like, even when he'd work at house shows, he would put me in the driver's seat and let me call the matches. And then he would always just give me feedback if there was something after. I wouldn't say that with this match, you know, we talked about this one a lot more. And I think, like I said, Pat Patterson worked with us. So we definitely went over a lot of this stuff, but Shawn always really gave me a lot of freedom to call the matches myself. You know, from the minute I basically got to meet him up there and stuff, I told him that he was my inspiration. So I think he kind of took to me kindly from that, and he made it a great experience.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is why. I mean, I can't imagine that every new guy that comes in, he's taking them under his wing and doing that with. So there was obviously something he saw in you different. Do you know what it is? I mean, is it your age? Is it the fact that you know, told him you were such a fan?
Probably a combination of all that. He just knew that they wanted to do something with me. And, you know, this is right after he worked Hulk Hogan. And I think that they were possibly supposed to have a return match, but I think they didn't. And then they just kind of expedited the plans to have me and him work, although I think they were planning on that originally anyway. It's just maybe they moved it up a little bit.
Yeah, so I was curious if you remember that. So this is a month after, this is the next pay-per-view after him and Hogan headline SummerSlam. So it's a big deal for you to be in there with him, obviously. Did he say anything to you about that match? Because obviously, you know, the word on the street was he was pissed off with how it went. He was kind of overselling to throw it at Hogan. Did he ever mention anything to you like, hey, I was pissed about that, or I wanted to make this match extra good?
No, I think he was completely happy with the fact. I remember him saying that he just wanted to get those five slaps to the face that he got on Hulk. And that was kind of a big thing to him. And, you know, I think he was looking to make us a seven-figure payday on it, which he might, I don't think he ended up doing, which he's pretty upset about. But yeah, he was just happy. You know, he said he didn't even need the offense. He just wanted to give him a slap five times. So,
well, it's funny because, you know, as I was watching this match again, I mean, it's a, you know, it's a quote unquote B show. You know, there's no title or anything at stake. But man, Sean just looks fired up. Like, I'm going to come out here and have the best match on the card by far. And I'm not saying he didn't always do that, but it just looked like there was something extra. And maybe it's because he took something in you. But I mean, this is a hell of a match.
Oh, yeah. This is beyond anything I was doing at the time, but you know, it's a testament to Sean. Like, I did well in it, but I mean, he was just so easy to work. I mean, he's such a great seller. And
so, as a fan of his, were you surprised that he came back and was as good as he was?
No, not at all. I just automatically expected if he came back, this guy was so good, he's gonna still have great matches. You know, he might not be as athletic, which he could, you know, he really wasn't, but he was an even better storyteller probably because he wasn't super athletic like he was before he did his first little retirement.
Well, what I found interesting about this match, you can see it right now. I mean, you had the bulk of the offense. I mean, you took it to him the entire match. You're working the back. Look, regardless of the outcome of this match, you came out looking like $1 million. I mean, did you feel like after the match, you were a bigger star than you entered?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, the chances of me beating Shawn Michaels, especially this early in my career, were slim. I never expected to beat Shawn, nor did I really care that much. But again, I was just so happy to work them. So I definitely know that, you know, sometimes you come out of matches and it's really just about the performance and you don't necessarily have to win, and you come out and your stock is raised because the fans, they see you kind of go to war. They see you kind of push a guy like Shawn Michaels to his limit. And in their mind, that's already, for a guy who's only a few months in, that's a big thing, you know, as opposed to if he just came out and beat me in 10 minutes, you know, we have this big, good contest that they enjoyed. So I definitely came out feeling like a winner, even though I didn't actually win the match.
Did anyone have any feedback for you in the back? Is there anything Sean said to you after the match? Did anyone with the company say anything to you?
You know, I don't remember specifically. I remember Stephanie McMahon made a remark about telling the girl I was with at the time that your boyfriend got paid tonight, because, you know, the match went well. I know that, and everybody was definitely complimentary on the match.
How much did that statement by her cost you?
Stephanie? Oh, yeah.
It cost you a nice purse or something?
Probably something, I'm sure.
Yeah. So as a fan growing up, what was your favorite Shawn Michaels match?
Well, you know, I'm always biased towards the WrestleMania 12 Iron Man match because that was the match that kind of pulled me back in, because I had a 2-year layoff of watching it, and then I saw Shawn was going into a world title match, and the story, the match itself, it was in the Anaheim Pond out there near me in California. But then again, like, just every pay-per-view match he's ever had is always unbelievable. You know, I could go back and watch any Shawn Michaels pay-per-view match and he just brings it to another level.
Well, the thing I found interesting too, and I mean, you know, you said this might have been or maybe was the best match of your career, but how many guys can say that the best match of their career was against Shawn Michaels? Because I was thinking about it the other day as I was watching this, and I'm thinking probably Triple H, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, maybe Jericho, maybe Angle, Mick Foley, Undertaker. I mean, you go down the list and they're all sitting there saying, yeah, that was probably the best match of my career. Is that like the biggest compliment you could give a wrestler to work with those different types of characters and all get the best out of them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is. I mean, because like all those guys had their best matches with Shawn. That's your point, right?
Absolutely. I mean, a guy like Mick Foley, a guy like Triple H, I mean, all these guys are like, that was the best match of my career. I mean, what more can you say about someone than that?
Well, I mean, quite frankly, he's just the best in-ring performer of all time. You know what I mean? Like, there's been bigger draws in wrestling, obviously, than Shawn. But I mean, when it comes to actually in-the-ring storytelling, selling, emotion, he's the pinnacle.
What's funny, I see a couple guys in the background standing up. By the end of this match, the place is going pretty wild. It was one of the louder crowds I've heard for a match that really had nothing at stake, right? I mean, there's no title. There's nothing wild going on. It's just two guys having a match, mostly in the ring. And I mean, you guys really had them with you, and it was good. So I got to ask you, was there ever plans to have this feud go on longer? I mean, you worked a bunch of house shows. Was there anything longer in mind? I mean, obviously, I'm sure that's something you would have liked if possible, right?
There wasn't any plan for that. I mean, there was talks of me winning the world title later that year, too. I don't know if Cena put the kibosh on that or what happened, but basically Sean and me were going to come out of this, and then I was going to go into, I think we went into Taboo Tuesday, and then I was supposed to go into possibly a world title program, but like I said, I don't know. Cena didn't really care for working me too much, and we just didn't have a good chemistry. Maybe that stopped that. I don't necessarily know.
So that's odd, because you guys trained together. I mean, were you guys friends at the time? You know, I know
we were just never that close. I don't know. He's a hard guy to get close to, but you know, I don't know. We just never kind of meshed, kind of oil and water type thing.
So you got Sean in the torture rack right now. When I saw this, I don't know how often you use this. But when I saw this, I'm like, man, that looks phenomenal. Did you ever think of that as a finishing move? Could you have done that as the master lock? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, the only thing I remember I was thinking at the time is they were already drawing the Lex Luger comparisons, and I kind of didn't really want to feed into that anymore. But I remember them saying, just do it. Like in this match, they were pushing for me to do it. Like I think either Patterson was or Sean, but they really wanted me to do it. And if they hadn't told me to do it, I probably wouldn't have done it. But it turned out to be real good, because I mean, you don't see it that much anymore, and just kind of seeing just the way it looks visually, it's pretty impressive.
So do you think you could have put anyone in the roster in that move at this time?
Yeah, probably. I mean, some guys, it would be tough to hold them up. But
well, Luger, I think Luger got Big Show up. So that's really the question. Could you have gotten Big Show up? I think he was a bigger boy at this point.
Maybe. I don't know. I was even much stronger at this point than now. But I can't say that I could hold Big Show up like that, honestly. I don't know. Maybe I could. But it's hard to even imagine how that looked.
So your nose is busted open. Do you remember how that happened?
I think Sean might have caught me. Like, Sean's punches are there. You know, he throws them at safe spots, but I think one of them might have caught me or something. But I mean, you know, I got that. His hand was bleeding. I don't know what that was from, but that was early in the match.
You know, it's so funny. Scott Hall just said that in an interview. He said Shawn Michaels throws some of the hardest working punches in the business, which I just found odd. Of all people, that's last I would have thought that.
We did a segment on Raw where he slapped me about a month prior to this, and he basically knocked me out. I was seeing stars after the slap, and he's done that same thing to Orton. I can only imagine when he slapped Hulk how bad those were. My God.
Going for the master lock here. Hey, I got to ask you a question about the master lock. This is just me being a total mark. If you wanted to put it in like real snug, was there a way to do that? And if so, how? If somebody was pissing you off and you were like, yeah, I'm going to put it in a little tighter, how would you go about doing that?
Well, what does he do? He mule kicks me here, I think.
So he knocks over the referee and he gets you in the balls. Which I thought was odd, because it didn't knock the ref out. It was just enough for him to get that in, I guess. And again, that's a huge compliment.
Yeah.
Dominated the match, and he more or less, as the good guy in the match, had to cheat to beat you. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you know, Sean, he's not real picky on stuff like that. Like I've heard other guys are. Like, he doesn't mind selling. I mean, he wasn't like greedy to get stuff in or anything like that, man. He was very giving about, you know, letting guys do stuff and get over. I think he knew that he was just probably the best seller in the history of wrestling, and that was his calling card. I mean, of course you want to see his offense and see him make a comeback, but seeing him sell was just another level.
Making his comeback here. How bad were those chops? They look like they're pretty stiff.
You know what? My adrenaline was so high. I mean, it wasn't even a factor. I'm sure it was freaking burning after, but you know, you're not even thinking about that a little bit.
So what's the deal with this blonde hair you got there? Is that bleach or what were you doing?
But the girl I was with at the time, well, I don't know, we were just trying something different. So she put some highlights in my hair, which looking back at now is kind of actually embarrassing.
I was curious because it seemed a little odd.
Yeah, definitely.
See, I could hear Vince, God damn it, pal, the Chris Masters doesn't have bleach in his hair. All right, so here's what I was talking about. Everyone's standing, they're going nuts for this. I mean, the crowd is super. I mean, again, this looks like a main event world title match if you're just watching the screen, okay?
Oh, yeah.
He's going for the super kick. He's about to end the match here on you, right? And then, oh, ducked it. Boom, master lock.
Yeah.
Which really no one had broken. You're laying it in.
Yeah.
I got everyone's just like, wait a second. Is this guy going to make Shawn Michaels tap out? I mean, look at this. It's great. Here we go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it worked out pretty well.
That's what I was asking. I didn't know if you could like push on their neck.
If you have it real tight and you push their neck forward, what it does is they turn purple. It cuts off blood flow to the head. And I actually did it to a couple of my friends actually around this time. I didn't necessarily know how to gauge it and not like look intense, but not be super intense. So I got Shelton Benjamin real good, and I got Hurricane Helms real good.
What's like your boy Cena with that STFU? I mean, he barely even touching the guy. It looks horrible. I mean, this looks
– yeah.
To a kid, he'd go, look, Shawn Michaels going to pass out. This is like stiff. I mean, it looks really good.
Yeah.
Look at this. Barely stays up. Yeah. You're shocked.
Yeah, see, look how good he is.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like this because it's perfect, you know. There has to be separation here, you know. I still kind of use it this way sometimes with opponents where they hop over the top.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like he just slid out just enough. I mean, he's laying on the mat. You know, he's laying on the apron there like motionless. And it's great. It makes you look fantastic. It's not like he broke the hold with a couple weak elbows or anything.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the whole thing, too, was finding a way out of it without breaking it because that's the only thing we had to protect. We couldn't break it.
Are you still using that move?
Oh, yeah, because it's what people recognize. You know, people still react to it to this day, you know, shockingly. So when they see me and I call for it, it usually generates a reaction.
And are they, whenever you do appearances with pictures and autographs, are they asking you to put you in it?
Oh, yeah. I do a lot of pictures where I'm putting people in the master lock, man. That's definitely one of my things. Like, once they see one person take a picture in it, then everybody kind of wants it, you know, that's familiar with me.
Well, there you go. Next time you see him, you get to be in the master lock. That's not a photo op you want to pass up. All right, so Sean slipping on the ropes a little bit, getting up top, caught him in the crossbody.
Try to put him in the lock again. Comes out, boom. Yeah, man, I was definitely felt real good about this. And even watching it again, it's a good match. Look at the crowd, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic finish. They're going nuts. I think, actually, if you go and watch some of those YouTube videos where it's like the best super kicks of all time, sometimes that one pops up because to go from locked in a finisher to just hit it out of nowhere. I mean, it was a fantastic, fantastic finish.
Yeah. And I think you were saying this. Sean seemed pretty, for it not being a main event or anything, and working with a green guy, Sean seemed pretty kind of fired up to go out and do it.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking you about the Hogan match, because I'm sitting there thinking, all right, maybe he was just pissed off. It's his first pay-per-view match since that. He's going to go out there and make this, you know, whatever you are, early 20s, relatively new guy, look like $1 million. And that's what it felt like he did. That's why I was curious if he mentioned anything to you or if he just seemed a little more focused.
It's funny when you say that, because, I mean, this was a very different match than him versus Hogan. Like when he wrestled Hogan, he was overselling everything to kind of make a bit of a mockery of Hogan, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And that's certainly the way it came across, especially when you go back and watch it.
Because nothing he did in this match, he didn't oversell any of my stuff. He just sold it good.
Oh, he sold it great. I mean, and look at him. So. He's face down. I mean, barely. Yeah. See, if you watch him right here, to me, that's like, look, I know I'm still the best performer in the world. I don't care what bullshit I had to deal with last month. You know I'm great. You know, that's kind of the way I took it. Like, I mean, look at it. This looks like his retirement match.
Just so you know, too, Sean wanted to have a match with Hogan. He had said that before, like a while before he had that match with Hulk, that was kind of the one guy he hasn't worked that he wanted to work. So I don't know how upset he was. I mean, I'm sure there was creative differences, you know, like you always hear with Hogan. Especially when he got two egos like that. But he definitely wanted to have the match. It was kind of on his checklist.
So I don't know if you're laying on the ground or you'd walked out at this point. I'm not sure. But what's going through your mind after this match?
Oh, man. I couldn't even tell you it was so long ago. But I know that I felt good about the match. And the reaction I got backstage from various people, being Stephanie, Vince, and all them, I knew that it had gone well. So I felt really good about the whole thing. And I was relieved. Like I said, I felt like when I came out of it, I wasn't the only guy in history to have a bad match with Sean, which I was worried about. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so a couple women coming out of Flair's limousine. Anyone look familiar?
As we were saying, that's my ex-fiance right there. And they had recruited her to be one of Ric Flair's girls. Oh, my God, look at this. Because the girls that they had sent locally were actually, I guess, not hot enough.
She was just backstage and they said, all right, you're better than the ones we recruited.
Yeah, they asked me if they could use her just because I don't know if Vince wasn't happy with the women they had or Rick wasn't, but they didn't like what they were brought, so they ended up using my woman.
I mean, he's
from that time.
He's like 60 years old here. How good is this?
Oh my God.
All right. Fantastic match. Thanks for reliving it with us. This was great.
No problem, man.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
Huge thanks to Chris Masters for talking to us. That was just fantastic. It was more fun to revisit this match than I expected. And, you know, who doesn't love a good Master Lock challenge? So I'm all about that. So, Tom, what did you think of the payoff?
Yeah, first of all, I thought Chris Masters was an awesome guest. I mean, one of my favorites so far. Just had some great insight. It was fun watching this match with him. You could tell that he really enjoyed it, took a lot of pride in it. And it was obviously really cool for him to work with HBK. And as you saw in that match and some of the stuff we talked about before the match, the dude was an absolute beast. I mean, Jeff really was gushing over his physique and clearly thought so. You know, John Cena actually went on record to say that Masters was the strongest competitor that he ever faced in the ring. Also fun that he shared with us his ex-fiance was in that Flair skit. Wasn't expecting that. Again, I thought that Sean had a little extra aggression throughout the match. He was pissed about the Hogan match, how it all played out. I heard he was a little pissed about his payday, if I understood Chris correctly. So he wanted to deliver. Also made me happy. Chris Masters got back into wrestling because of the Shawn Michaels Iron Man match and said it's one of his favorites. I would agree. Many think it was too long. It was kind of boring. I thought it was a phenomenal match, and if you look at that card, there wasn't really much else to fill time. So the Iron Man match was the right thing to do at WrestleMania 12, and not many guys would be able to do that on that stage. And look, this is one of, if not the best match of Chris Masters' career. And what I find so interesting about that is think of how many guys out there can say that the Shawn Michaels match they had was one of, if not the best of their career. I mean, let's just think, all right? Marty Jannetty, Jeff Jarrett, Chris Masters just said it, Triple H, Mick Foley, Kurt Angle, Chris Jericho, Undertaker, Vince McMahon. There's probably 20 people that I'm leaving out, but just some classic matches. Put Bret Hart in that category, maybe Steve Austin. So again, there's a lot of guys on that list. Jeff, let's talk aftermath.
Yeah, you know, as we could see, Masters took the sweet chin music, which led to the 1-2-3 loss. Small little piece after this that Chris Masters and Carlito, they had previously, and really they had tag teamed a lot. And so the two of them actually took on a returning to TV Triple H and Ric Flair. Masters and Carlito ended up losing that match, but the storyline that developed off of that was Triple H turned on Ric Flair, hit him with a sledgehammer, and so this led to a little bit more of a story with Triple H and Flair in a steel cage match, which was for the Intercontinental Championship, which we had referenced Flair winning earlier, and Flair ended up winning this match too and retaining. So just kind of interesting how that played out. Exactly. So Chris Masters wrestled on some big pay-per-views here and there, but his first WWE Championship match was actually on Raw on November 28th of 2005. Masters actually put Cena in the Master Lock, and something that they can never take away from him, that Chris Masters was actually the first wrestler to, as we say in the business, put Cena to sleep in his submission. And so up to that point, the doctor of Thugonomics, he didn't tap out, but he did pass out, went to sleep from the submission. And so kind of interesting there, kind of factoid. And so a match for the championship, though, was set up. It was a triple threat, no DQ submission match with Kurt Angle, John Cena, and Chris Masters. Quite the pairing there. So it was well known. Of course, everyone knows Kurt Angle has the ankle lock as his submission. Chris Masters has the Master Lock as his submission, but John Cena, up to this point, had never really used a submission in any of his matches. And so let me know, but is everything I could tell that this was the first instance of him using the STF to win a match? And so I did a little research here. We all know it as the STFU. And so I never even put two and two together here. The STF stands for the Step Over Toe Hold Face Lock. I always thought that it stood for what else it stands for. And so it was actually the little Baxter. He used the FU, which is, we also know as the attitude adjustment now after the attitude area. And so the STFU, the U got added because the doctor of Thugonomics, and that was his character. So that's where that comes from. Little quick history there on John Cena as well too. But
that's one of the worst submission moves in the history of wrestling. Not the actual move, it's the way he does it. He doesn't lock it in. It looks so fake, it's ridiculous. And he has been told multiple times by Steve Austin that you got to make it more snug, kid. So I don't understand what he's doing and why he can't, after 15 years of being a main eventer, figure out how to make a submission not look so damn fake. It drives me nuts.
If you hold up one of his hats to your ear, you can hear him calling the match. So, Chris Masters, again, one of his big things, him and Carlito working again as a tag team. They actually lost to the Big Show and Kane at WrestleMania 22 for the tag belts. Didn't get that one here. Fun note as well, too. Again, a little bit of trivia. This is trivia heavy right now. Before NXT was what it is today and how we know it, NXT and the developmental, they had coaches who were some of the wrestlers at the time who would take the younger guys under their wing, and it was seasons and it was a whole thing. And so Chris Masters was actually one of the pros, if you will, on season 4 of NXT. And so the first person that he was kind of mentoring and working under him, everyone's favorite commentator now, Byron Saxton, was actually working with Chris Masters at this time.
Was Saxton training to be a wrestler?
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know
that. Yeah, and that's where a part of how he got in there. And so they could trade pros and kind of superstars, which was part of the kind of show's premise during this season. So Masters ended up with a one, again, this is one I had to dig a little bit, but Jacob Novak, who did a little bit of time in NXT, and then I could not find anything else on Jacob Novak. And so he just wasn't a ring name for anyone other than that. I'm sure he's out there, but don't know what he's up to nowadays. So
he's probably driving a truck across the country listening to this. And if you are, Jacob, we're thinking about you, bud.
So, Tom, again, we're throwing it at each other. Do you know who the season 4 winner of NXT was?
I don't. I didn't know there were 4 seasons, so I certainly didn't know the winner.
There was 5, actually, following that. But the winner of season 4 of NXT was, at the time, Johnny Curtis, who we also know nowadays as one of my favorites, Fandango. So, always good stuff. So, Tom, any other thoughts on the aftermath of this one?
Well, who else won the NXT? Now you got me curious. Do you know who any of the other winners were?
I'll pull it up real quick, yeah. Okay. I'll come back to it.
That'd be great. I'd love to know. So a couple things I had in my notes here, and I mentioned this earlier, but they really had big hopes for this guy, right? Anytime you've got that big presentation and you've got the pyro, to me as a fan, it says, oh, well, this guy, this means something, right? This guy's going to be a star. They're putting in time and effort to him. So, you know, it was kind of disappointing that it didn't work out more because, again, I knew they had high hopes for him. But WrestleMania 21, he ended up in the final 2 in a battle royal along with Booker T. He'd end up losing that. According to Meltzer, the 2 highest rated matches Masters was ever involved with, and I'd like for him to come back and talk about either of these because they both look pretty good. One of them was those Raw versus SmackDown, you know, brand versus brand Survivor Series matches. So he was involved in one of those later on that year, had a bunch of big names in it, including Shawn Michaels. That was highly ranked. And then the New Year's Revolution Elimination Chamber. And that's the one that Edge famously would cash in afterwards. You know, again, just to show you how much emphasis or energy there was around Chris Masters, he was in that Elimination Chamber till the very end. He would lose to Carlito, and then Carlito would quickly beat John Cena. But both of them were in there longer than Shawn Michaels. They were in there longer than Kurt Angle. They were in there longer than Kane. So kind of the reverse order of maybe what you would expect, but certainly made it fun. And again, Masters was just a big part of things. So I'd love to talk to him about the Elimination Chamber and that match. And then obviously Edge cashing in was a really big surprise and a great moment. The only other thing I had here was in 2005, Masters was the 4th place finisher for the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Most Improved Wrestler category. That was won by Batista. And then for the PWI 500 that year, he finished 116th, which in some ways is hard to believe considering who he was rubbing elbows with towards the end of the year. So with that being said, Jeff, what did the newsletters say about Chris Masters and Shawn Michaels at Unforgiven 2005.
Yeah, some of just the different rankings and kind of things that we had at the time. I'll start with the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Kind of shortened it a little bit here, but the second half of it said, quote, "It was really obvious during the heat how far Masters is from being a main event level. I mean, how can he follow direction at all? But he's so bland and has no semblance of aggression or personality. It's hard to have a boring match with Shawn Michaels, but he is doing it here. Shawn finally made his usual comeback and hit the flying elbow. He missed a super kick, however, and Masters put on the full Nelson. Shawn did his five-minute full Nelson miracle again. He finally scaled the top rope, and Masters was told he had to break the hold. Shawn went up for the high cross, but Masters caught him and went for the full Nelson again. Shawn slipped out, and boom, there was the super kick for the pin. Good finish, not a classic or anything, but Shawn did all he could, and it wasn't like Masters was bad. But it was a textbook great worker versus big stiff match. 3 stars. After that, as well, the PW Torch had a little different take here. Quote, "Shawn Michaels beat Chris Masters at 1642 with the super kick. Michaels made the master lock look like a phenomenal move by struggling to escape the hold on several occasions before employing a smart strategy by leaping over the top rope onto the apron to earn a rope break. At the end of the match, Masters ducked Sweet Chin Music and went back to the well for the master lock, only to have Michaels slip out and catch Masters unexpectedly with Sweet Chin Music. 3.5 stars. And finally, when we can find the match on Grapple, because not every match is on there, but there's more and more added all the time. 4 ratings from fans out there, 3.5 stars. So somewhere, you know, average, we take even just that, we got back to right in that 3, 3.5 range. So I'll say it was pretty accurate score, as my own will reflect in a minute. It wasn't over the top, but, you know, as I like to say, I was sports entertained. Meltzer did, at least in the first, he kind of toned it back a little bit at the end there, but he was seemed a little harsh to me in the first part of just kind of his take on Masters.
Maybe I spend too much time on Twitter. I am just exhausted about debating stars and the merits of stars and what stars are and what they aren't and order of matches. And my God, it just gets exhausting. So I don't want to dive too deep into my thought on the stars, but I'm in 100% agreement in terms of, I just thought Meltzer was way too critical of Masters and of the match. And I just don't get it. I thought it was a really solid match. So I'd say that, similar to you, my thoughts on the match fall more in line with what Keller said than what Meltzer said on that one. And again, overall, it was an entertaining match. I thought it deserved its spot in the card as the second to last match. And they did a great job. And look, oftentimes in wrestling, the finish of the match is 90% of what makes a match good or bad, and it had a hell of a finish. So I liked it. I didn't see any major issues with it. I thought Shawn was super aggressive. I thought Masters was really good in his role, and both of them came out looking better than they went into it. So, Jeff, as always, let's talk payoff score.
Before we talk payoff score, I don't want our fans to think we forgot the winners of NXT seasons. And so season one was Wade Barrett, as many of us know. Not there anymore. His pro was Chris Jericho, so that was interesting. And if you're, there's some interesting names on the list, this list, but I'll just give you the winners. Season two, it was the now Loki, who is out there as well, still wrestling with MLW, I believe. Yeah. After that, it was the women's season, and Caitlin was the winner on that one. Also featured one AJ as well, too, and so send Naomi, a couple interesting names. Vicky Guerrero was with Caitlin, our previous guest, wonderful person as well. Season four, like we said, Johnny Curtis, Fandango out there as well, too. And then season five had a couple different people. Titus O'Neil was on there. Darren Young did well. And then one who just can't catch a break, EC3, was on this season as well, too. And then good topic, there's some names on the, quote, lost season that we will discuss on the after show, because you're going to like some of these names. So With that, though, the payoff score and kind of where we're at, Tom said it. What we like to do every week, we just do a 1 through 10 payoff score. We look at the build, the crowd, the commentary, the in-ring product, just, you know, whatever we feel is important to the overall story. We don't have a specific formula. You know, one match is higher than the other. We don't need to compare it necessarily that way. It's just we kind of do whatever we want, and that's okay. So Tom and I don't discuss this ahead of time. It kind of makes this a little bit more fun just to see where we're all at. So with that, Tom, I will kick it to you. What is your payoff score?
That's right. We do not discuss it in advance. We do not need anyone questioning our integrity. I have this one at a 6. So nothing terribly remarkable in either the build or the aftermath. So I guess that would be my negative. It wasn't a great match, but it was a really solid match. But what I liked about it is that both guys were better because of it. So Shawn Michaels, he probably needed a win following the Hogan debacle, if you will, and everything that went into that. He needed to be turned back from heel to babyface. And this match did it. It made him that sympathetic babyface. We remember why we love the guy. He hits the sweet chin music to get the win over the bigger guy who had dominated the match. So HBK looks better because of it. Chris Masters, younger guy, okay, still relatively new. This is a big platform for him. And despite losing, he came out looking a lot better and being a bigger star than he went into it. So I really like that part of it. So I'm going to give it a 6. Enjoyed it. And Jeff, what do you have for the payoff score?
Yeah, I'm going to stick just on a middle ground here and give it a 5. I think it was fine for both guys. It wasn't, for me, it wasn't good. It wasn't bad. But, you know, as I like to say, I was sports entertained, though. It's not a can't miss, but it was fun, though, as well. So that was good stuff. I will say there was, because I kind of watched little bit more of the pay-per-view just to kind of check it out. But there was a fun promo right before this match where it was actually Maria Kanellis. She was the kind of backstage interviewer right then. And she said, "Why do they call you Masturbate?" And so I got a good chuckle out of that one. He actually corrected
her. Jeff, how old are you?
Me? 35. Yeah.
Okay. Can you still find that joke funny?
After the joke you made earlier, let's not talk about what each other finds funny.
What kind of show you think we're running here? We have to edit that.
That's
out.
Funny. So
my wife listens to that show.
Yeah. So that's okay. Sorry, Grandma. But so Tom, I enjoyed that little bit. You know, I'm gonna stick with a 5. I think that, you know, it was good stuff. But anyway, you know, I'm not gonna shit on it either. So, Tom, any final thoughts on this one?
Yeah, so I got one final thought, and this is, you know, as we really wanted to highlight Chris Masters in this episode. I feel bad because I feel like he came into the business at the wrong time. Keep in mind, Jeff, he's 22 years old when this match takes place. 22. He would have never been on the main roster in today's day and age. Why? Because he would have been in NXT. And what would he have been doing in NXT? Learning how to work longer matches, working with different types of guys, really figuring out what his character was. And he alluded to it in the interview. It was like, okay, we kind of have this idea and we'll figure out what your character is along the way. And they didn't even know. And so what I wish would have happened is that him with that raw talent and that great look and enthusiasm for the business, I just wish he would have had like a few years in NXT to really figure out what his character was going to be, whether it was this character or something different. So, you know, I know a lot of people maybe give shit to Triple H and NXT and, you know, we missed the territory system, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing is at this time, there wasn't many territories or many developmental places, certainly that weren't teaching the business the way it needed to be taught for someone to be successful on the big stage. So I commend WWE for taking the player development, if you will, into their own system and creating something where guys could learn. So again, I stand by the fact that I think that in a different time, I think he would have been a megastar. He just became a main roster guy before they knew the character, before he had a chance to fully develop, and it hurt him. But again, I thought he was a really solid performer. He's still out there doing matches, and you know, people love getting put in the master lock at conventions. So great guy, great interview. Look forward to having him on a future episode of The Payoff. As we head to the finish here, Jeff, anything else for us?
Yeah, it's just a fun match. You know, again, I scored at middle ground, but I enjoyed going back and watching it too. So it was good stuff. So you can find Chris Masters. He is still out there, not only on Twitter, he is at Chris Adonis. That's at Chris Adonis. But you can still find him in the ring too. And so kind of look him up. He kind of posts where he's going to be, but he's still out there grinding and out there wrestling matches. So definitely check him out when you got the opportunity, especially if he's in your kind of area. Again, as we always kind of close it out here, I'd like to remind everyone, subscribe, give us those 5 stars, spread the word about the payoff. We are very active, social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all week long, all day, all night, at Payoff Pod. And lastly, don't forget our Patreon, just that one tier. That's it, but all kinds of good stuff in it, though. PayoffPatreon.com. You can find us there. And so lastly, Tom, I'm not going to lock you out from closing the show. So take us home, buddy.
So I feel like one of these times you're going to do the finish instead of me. You're going to swoop in. And you're going to thank everyone for joining us on the payoff. And
I know I'm enjoying the setup right now. I set you up to spike it. So here we go.
If you try to steal it from me, I'm the one that controls the record button. I'm going to say it after you. So just fair warning, and I will not edit it out. All right.
This being said, fans, I know.
As always, we appreciate everyone supporting the show. We hope you're enjoying it. We really, really could not do this without you. So thanks for listening. And as always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.